In the backwoods of America, we have climbed the highest mountains, searched the densest forest, dragged the swamps, and scoured the prairies to find our leader, retired U.S. Marine gunny, Bud Cornwell.
I proudly stand next to the flag, and I thank the gentleman from New York for providing it for us, this flag. So many have fought and died for this flag, which stands for our democracy. When Benjamin Franklin came out of Independence Hall, I've heard this over and over. On September 17th, 1787, the day our Constitution was adopted, he came out of Independence Hall and people said to him, Dr. Franklin, what do we have, a monarchy or a republic? And he said, as you know, he said, a republic, if we can keep it. If we can keep it. And this Constitution is the blueprint for our republic and not a monarchy. But when we have a president who says, Article 2 says, I can do whatever I want, that is in defiance of the separation of powers. That's not what our Constitution says. So what is at stake is our democracy. What are we fighting for? Defending our democracy for the people.
Great patriots of America, the gunny's back. Yes, I have dealt with a few medical issues that have prevented me. One of them is a concussion, as you know, is detrimental in thinking, you know, your brain, how things operate. So I'm recovering from that. And I think maybe I can stand here and speak to you with a logical sense. So let's see how this works out. So today's episode is very simple. It's talking about our republic. No, not democracy. Democracy is not in the Constitution. Did you know that? The word democracy does not exist in the Constitution. And the founding fathers understood that. And I'm going to prove to you why a, quote, democracy, which was established by the Greeks, doesn't work. But a republic does. The United States was established by some great, great minds that understood that a monarchy, which they were facing with the King of England, cannot be prosperous in this new country called America. They wanted a new government that is for and by the people. However, what they established was the conceptual idea that in all these states that are going to be developed, every state has a different lifestyle, a different way of living. Therefore, the states are responsible, not the federal government, according to democracy. The states are responsible for their citizens because we have a direct connection to the state. This is why the republic was created, so that we can represent our voice in the state, and then the state can take it to the federal government. However, today, the federal government is so large that the states and our voices are being suppressed based upon DC, based upon the people that are there, the president, whatever. They have lost consciousness of what a republic is. So I'm going to play you a clip from Nancy Pelosi that is saying that our democracy during Trump's impeachment trial in the House, how this president, along with others, but this one specifically, no longer follows the Constitution. The reason behind that is because they're using this democracy world, and democracy is, according to the Greeks, the people standing up. So, give you a better understanding of this throughout this podcast, you'll have a vision, a going back in time vision of how democracy was created and how the U.S. Republic was created. You cannot confuse the two. The Republic is the Constitution, and the military stands up to defend the Constitution, not democracy. So listen to Nancy Pelosi go crazy. She is saying that the flag stands for our democracy. No, it stands for the Constitution. That's why we support and defend the flag. That's why all of these people died, because of the Republic of the United States, not democracy. So the blueprint for the Republic, what she's talking about, is the Constitution. Well, of course it is. But they're using this terminology, democracy, to water down the Constitution. They don't want the Constitution. She says it's Benjamin Franklin saying if it's a republic, if you can keep it. The only way to keep the republic is the states, the separate states of America, continue to fight against the tyranny of this federal government. Give you a great example. Let's say you live in New York. You don't like what's happening in New York. That's fine. But according to the Constitution, you can move to another state where you have an option to be a free citizen without the state taxes, the corruption of the government in the state. That's why they created a republic. It's really that simple. And she says, what is at stake? Democracy for the people. No. Democracy, as per the Greeks, that was established, that all of these people in this very small country would have a say in their election, in their defeating the minarchies, etc. But this is America. It has never been a minarchy until today, when a political entity, along with the globalists, are working to destroy and using the terminology of democracy to destroy this country. So what is the key differences, like I'm telling you, between a democracy and a republic? Glad you asked. The key difference between a democracy and a republic lies in the limits placed on the government by law, which has implications for minority rights. Both forms of the government tend to use representational systems, i.e., citizens vote to elect politicians to represent their interests and the form of the government. In a republic, a constitution or charter of rights protects certain inalienable rights that cannot be taken away by the government, even if it has been elected by the majority of the voters. You must understand that the majority is democracy. States and individual rights is a republic. In a pure democracy, the majority is not restrained in this way, and it can impose its will on the minority, which means New York, which has a lot of people, California, etc., they can impose their will on us that are not part of those states according to democracy. Most modern nations, including the United States, are democratic republics with a constitution which can be amended by a popularity elected government. But however, in the case of America, the states have the option, the states have the option to represent the people also and amend the Constitution. And I'm going to talk to you about that. This comparison therefore contrasts the form of government in most countries today with the theoretical construction of pure democracy, mainly to highlight the features of a republic. If you compare the two, a democracy takes the majority of the people and influences the government. In a republic, it takes the state representatives of the people. Therefore, the Electoral College. Right? You understand what I'm saying? For example, Oklahoma has X number of Electoral College votes. New York, California, etc. has more. But there's a lot of states, a lot of people within those states that have a say. And if we use democracy as Pelosi is talking about, there will be nothing other than tyranny. It's that simple. This country, unbeknownst to any other country, including Rome, which was, quote, a republic, has ever survived through the will of the people and not their environment that they live in. That's how you must understand that. If I live in a big city, I have buses, etc. If I live in the outskirts of Alabama, I don't have all that. And I won't vote for it because I don't have it. It's not going to happen. But in a republic, it's based upon the states to elect officials that represent all of the states, which therefore represents all of the people. So I'm going to play a clip called The Birth of Democracy so you can have a better understanding of how the Greeks established democracy, quote, in their country, which became a starting point of America towards a republic.
For centuries, Athens had been just one of those 1,500 city-states, climbing its way out of the ashes of the Dark Age. Teetering between the rule of rich aristocratic families who came to power by birth, or power-grabbing leaders called tyrants, people were often subjected to draconian laws. Literally, they were written by a tyrant named Draco in 621 BC. Farmers who couldn't pay their debts were forced into slavery. Simple crimes like stealing a cabbage were punishable by death. Athens was on the brink of revolution until a wise reformer named Solon stepped in with a series of reforms that would make today's Greeks proud. He freed all debtor slaves, eliminated the death penalty, for all but extreme cases, and wrestled political power out of the hands of noble bloodlines by establishing a council of 400 citizens to run the city. It was a big step, untethering governance from inheritance. But only Athens' wealthiest citizens had the privilege of serving on the council. And in the decades that followed, factions of competing aristocrats formed.
You have a lot of seesawing around about who's actually in charge. And this actually gets worse and worse.
In 508 BC, the power struggle came to a boil between two rival aristocrats, Isagoras and Cleisthenes. Isagoras, with support from military powerhouse Sparta, took control of the city, installed an oligarchy of nobles, and banished Cleisthenes. With the Athenian elite squarely in Isagoras's corner, Cleisthenes was left with only one place to turn.
We're told that Cleisthenes took into his faction ho demos, the common people.
Ordinary citizens had had just about enough of aristocrats and nobles running their city. For their support, Cleisthenes agreed to break the hold of aristocratic factions, determine power by elections, not wealth, and institute trials by jury. Neither leader could have predicted what happened next. An all-out revolt swept over Athens. Citizens stormed the Acropolis and sent Isagoras and the Spartans packing. And Cleisthenes?
The way to think about Cleisthenes is he's a surfer. He is riding a really big wave of an increasingly clear identity of a common people, that they are the people of Athens. They are Athens. He gets ahead of the wave, he rides it well. The rest of it is history.
Whether he meant to or not, Cleisthenes ushered in a revolutionary new way of running a society. In 507 BC, democracy was born.
I cannot overemphasize how stomach-churningly, mind-blowingly, electrically exciting this was in ancient Greece, because this is the first time in the human experience, as far as we know, when I, the people, are allowed to act as a political agent. Suddenly you get perfume makers and cheese traders and generals and aristocrats standing next to one another in the assembly, deciding how they should run their own lives.
Athenian democracy wasn't exactly of, by, and for all the people. You needed to be a free male citizen. Women, slaves, and foreign-born need not apply, which means fewer than 50,000 in a city of more than 200,000, less than 20%, were actually eligible to vote. Still, the idea of democracy was wildly popular. Democritus, or judge of the people, the star of Eno's mural, became one of the most prevalent names of the time.
So this is the most extraordinary moments in the human story. Democracy just appears from that febrile, fervent bubble that is Greece, and it's been delivered down to us as one of the most extraordinary legacies of the Greek world.
The democracy emerges in strife. It was the will of the ordinary people. That is what made democracy possible.
2.5 millennia later, it's ordinary people who continue to fight for it.
They will lead you to believe that there's a lot of democracy countries in this world today. But see, just like Greece, democracy is all this rise of these people, you know, these lower classes, etc., rising up. But it didn't solve the minarchy issue. All it did was energize these minarchy, fascist, whatever word you want to use, people to listen to, quote, the minorities. But it didn't solve the problem. Creating America, using the Constitution and a republic, solve that issue. The republic represents a class of states, different cultures, different ideas coming together to represent their state and assign those people into a federal government where the, quote, majority doesn't rule. And the minarchy, or the powers to be, do not have the ability to suppress the people in all of these states, which limits the federal government. That was the intent. But now we're at a point where the federal government does not care or participate in the Constitution of the United States. And this is why we are dealing with the globalists, if America went back and established, reestablished the rule of the republic and the states, the globalists would not even be involved. However, if you're a politician in the federal government, whether you're in the executive branch, the judicial branch, or the legislative branch, you are now being fueled by money to circumvent your life outside of the republic into the globalists. That is how I understand what's happening. So now I'm going to play another clip of the Constitution. Why a republic? This clip comes from Director James Madison program at Princeton University. Yeah, you know, Ivy League college. Robert George tells us what a republic actually means.
Against all odds, the Americans won their War of Independence. But their success brought a new challenge, no less daunting. What sort of government should they choose for themselves? How could they ensure that the tyranny of the English king, George III, would not be replaced by a homegrown tyranny? One possibility was to establish an American monarchy with a better king. That was tempting for some, especially because they had a superb person for the job, General George Washington. To his legion of admirers, the fact that he did not want to be king made him an even more attractive candidate. The other possibility was to establish a republic, a government of and by the people and their representatives. But this solution came with a big problem. Historically, republics like those in ancient Greece and Rome had always failed. And when they failed, they were usually replaced by the very worst, most oppressive forms of tyranny. Might there be a way to make republicanism work and last? To structure a constitution that would protect the new American republic from the social and political pathologies that had destroyed republics throughout history? America's founding fathers, men like Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, Alexander Hamilton, and James Madison, believed they had answers. They had risked everything when they declared their independence from England. They were willing to risk everything again to create a new, different, and better type of republic. The key, they all agreed, was to establish structural limits on power, the power of anyone and any institution exercising governmental authority. In the summer of 1787, in one of the most creative acts in human history, these men, minus Jefferson and Adams, who were serving the country abroad, fashioned a national government divided into three separate parts or branches: the legislative, Congress, the executive, the president, and the judicial, the courts. Congress would make the laws, the executive would execute the laws, and the courts would settle disputes arising under the Constitution and laws of the United States. Dividing power would prevent power being concentrated in any one branch, the concept of checks and balances. Moreover, the central government would be limited to the powers specifically delegated to it, having no powers beyond those enumerated. Where then would most of the powers of government reside? The answer was with the states. This was not, as some wrongly suppose, done to protect slavery. Rather, it was done out of the common sense belief that those public officials nearer to the people would naturally be more responsive and accountable to the people. Just to make sure nobody missed the point, after attaching a Bill of Rights to the Constitution, the founders enshrined this principle in the 10th Amendment. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. In short, whatever the Constitution does not specifically delegate to the national government belongs to the states and the people. But the power of the states was also limited by constitutional prohibitions in certain areas, either because power in those areas had been delegated exclusively to the national government, such as the power to enter into treaties with other nations, or because the framers did not want government at any level to have certain powers, such as the power to confer titles of nobility, something incompatible with republicanism. Still, as much care as the framers took to constrain government power, federal and state, they knew their efforts would fail unless one more component was present: citizens imbued with the spirit of republicanism, people who understood the principles of their Constitution, who valued self-government, and who would be willing to do the work necessary for its maintenance. Citizens who would not yield to demagogues who promised prosperity, security, or anything else at the price of liberty. James Madison had this in mind when he said that only a well-instructed people could be permanently a free people. By a well-instructed people, Madison meant above all a people well-educated about our constitutional liberties and responsibilities. When, at the conclusion of the Constitutional Convention, a woman asked Benjamin Franklin what kind of government he and the others had proposed for the nation, he famously responded, "A republic, madam, if you can keep it." The wise old Philadelphia polymath had history in mind in giving that answer. He knew that he and his colleagues at the convention had supplied only the mechanics of what was needed for a republic to long endure. The rest could only be supplied by we the people, understanding and fulfilling our duties as citizens. That's why studying the Constitution is essential. How can we fulfill our duties as citizens if we don't understand the document on which that citizenship is based? I'm Robert George, professor of jurisprudence and director of the James Madison Program at Princeton University for Prager University.
America is today and always been a republic of the states. We have a massive challenge in front of us because of the massive federal government tyranny coming to the American people. But there is a way to change the mindset and do what the founding fathers told us that would happen if this country is being taken over by tyrants. Then the people, through their states, can solve many of these problems. And it's in the Constitution. It's called Article 5. In Article 5, the people, not just the legislation in D.C., but the people can actually change and amend the Constitution to reflect their voice and ensure the republic lives through the states instead of the tyranny of this federal government. Article 5. One way to amend the Constitution, which most of us know, is through the legislation in our federal government, which we know all of these amendments, 16, 17, 24, etc., have been presented by the representatives in D.C. and amended, which means these states have agreed. 3/4 of the states must agree to any changes to the Constitution. However, at this point, now we can use Article 5, the second part of it, where the states can have a convention outside of the federal government and amend the Constitution to hold the federal government in responsibility to the states. Thank God that the founding fathers understood that. So, what is the Convention of States? I'm going to give you a 2-minute clip to explain it. You will now understand how the states, the representatives of the states outside of the federal government, can make changes to our Constitution and hold the federal government responsible. Think about that as we take a break, and you will hear the purpose and reason behind the Convention of States.
The United States Constitution was written to form a more perfect union that would enable checks and balances to prevent a bloody revolution from being a necessary measure to abolish tyranny. Excellent though it was, Colonel George Mason feared the national government might one day end in a tyrannical aristocracy. The rights of the people needed to be secured against potential corruption at the national level. One of the solutions the framers decided upon can be found in Article 5, which gives state legislators the authority to call a convention that bypasses federal legislators to amend the Constitution. That gives we the people the opportunity to make some long overdue structural adjustments. Maybe term limits would be a good place to start. Here's how the process works. Citizens request their state legislators to pass a bill called an application with operative language identical in each state. These legislators of the states then pass the application. Generally, only a simple majority is needed. Congress shall, by law, call a convention of the states as soon as it receives applications from 2/3 of the state legislatures. That's 34 states. Delegates chosen by the state legislatures attend the convention. Each state only gets one vote at the convention, but they can send as many delegates to represent the state as they so choose. Amendments are proposed, debated, and voted upon at the convention. Finally, ratification takes place in the states. Each amendment must be ratified by 3/4 of the states in order to become part of the U.S. Constitution. But what about a runaway convention? Let's get a reality check. Like constitutional law scholar Robert G. Nadelson says, there are far more political and legal constraints on a runaway convention than on a runaway Congress. The convention delegates, also called commissioners, are bound to the will of their state legislatures. If they don't vote as their states demand, they get recalled. They might even get sent to prison. Furthermore, a full 3/4 of the state legislatures, we're talking 38 state legislatures, must ratify each and every amendment in order for it to become part of the U.S. Constitution. Even Alexander Hamilton and Abraham Lincoln, who favored national government, emphasized that Article 5 gives states authority over the national government. Hamilton writes that national rulers have no option upon the subject. The words of Article 5 are peremptory. The Congress shall call a convention. And Lincoln says the convention mode seems preferable in that it allows amendments to originate with the people themselves. Article 5 Convention of the States is a safe route to stopping federal overreach. Civilizations rise and fall. Let's be a civilization that saw the cycle of collapse coming and broke it.
Thank you very much for listening to the Patriot Cause. Please share it far and wide. I know we have an issue with sharing on social media, but you need to do that. You need to get the truth out so people can understand. Do not sit by and listen. Action. Send this information out so your families, your friends, your co-workers can understand what is happening in America.
Stop rolling downhill like a snowball headed for hell. Stand up for the flag and let's all ring the liberty bell. Let's make a Ford and a Chevy that'll still last 10 years. Like the show. 'Cause the best of the free life is still yet to come.